Hello and welcome to Context India. I'm Faye D'Souza, coming to you from the city of Mumbai. On Context India, our aim is to give you an in-depth look into the world's most populous democracy from the inside. We're taking a close look at what has perhaps been the biggest crisis India has faced since independence, the COVID pandemic. In this, our third episode, we're examining the role of the Indian media. How effective were they in producing journalism in public interest, countering disinformation, and holding those in power to account? I will be speaking with two journalists whose outlets occupy very different spaces in the Indian media landscape. Siddharth Vadarajan, founding editor of the online news publication The Wire, and R. Jagannathan, editorial director of Swarajya, a monthly magazine and website. At the close of this week's episode, we will be featuring an excerpt from a piece of music created through the COVID months. This week, our artist is Bengali singer-songwriter Amartya Ray. When COVID hit India first in 2020 and then much worse in the second wave of 2021, it tested all of the country's institutions, exposing deep flaws in some sectors. Few more flawed than the country's vast media sphere.
देखिए इस वक्त हमारे साथ जो गुरु स्वामी रामदेव खुद इस वक्त जुड़ चुके हैं. स्वामी रामदेव मिल गया राम बाण.
रागिनी नायर, मैं और आप बहस कर सकते हैं. मैं आगे बढ़ना चाहती.
India has more than 400 news channels that broadcast in about 20 different languages. There are thousands of newspapers and news websites, and then of course there are the social media platforms as well. This is one of the most active and heavily populated media markets in the world. And in the past decade, it has grown more polarized and politicized than ever before. Just how well equipped and willing are these numerous news outlets, especially the most prominent ones, to deal with the challenges of reporting on COVID in India?
One thing that we definitely needed news reporting to focus on was demanding accountability from the government. We should have had more journalists question our preparedness. We should have had the media really examine the state of health infrastructure on what we were being told by governments versus the reality on the ground. But if you look at the Delhi-based national television news channels, and the reason we're focusing on them is because they really do set the agenda and they have a mass following. A majority of these channels, with the exception of maybe two or three channels, were primarily acting as cheerleaders of the government.
दुनिया के बड़े-बड़े देश जहां वर्तमान की सोच रहे हैं, वहीं पीएम मोदी ने भविष्य का प्लान बना लिया है. 2024 तक का प्लान बन चुका है, देश के पैसों से देश के कल्याण का प्लान.
Through the first year of the pandemic, some of the TV news coverage really exemplified the problems with India's mainstream media. Sensationalism, a lack of critical perspective, and especially in one case, that of the international Muslim movement called Tablighi Jamaat, a tendency to zero in on a group and stigmatize them. In March 2020, in the early days of the pandemic, and well before the government announced the first nationwide lockdown, members of the Tablighi Jamaat gathered in the thousands for a conference at the group's headquarters in New Delhi. Social distancing guidelines were not followed by the group's members. But they were not alone in that. Across India, people were slow to follow mandates on distancing and masking. The media pile-on on the Tablighi Jamaat was one of the uglier moments in the coverage of the pandemic.
अब ये बिल्कुल स्थापित हो चुका है कि तबलीकी जमात की लापरवाही के चलते देश भर में कोरोना एक महामारी बनकर टूट पड़ा है.
The hysteria over the Tablighi Jamaat was one instance of misinformation being amplified during the pandemic. It was not the only one.
Misinformation has been a significant problem. I mean, everyone was trying to come to grips with what COVID was and didn't understand it. The other thing I would say which became a problem is definitely the point at which we started believing that the virus was gone. So there was no scientific evidence to that statement. And many of us started believing it. So it actually became misinformation. And that's what led to, in some ways, the second wave coming back to hit us in a very, very powerful way.
When the second wave of COVID hit us in April 2021, it became too difficult even for pro-government news outlets to ignore the situation. We lost many newsmen and women. A very prominent pro-government TV anchor, in fact, Rohit Sardana from the Hindi channel Aaj Tak, also lost his life to COVID.
मीडिया जगत ने एक चमकता सितारा खोया. रोहित के चाहने वाले करोड़ों फैंस ने अपना हीरो खोया।
But even in this situation, when the lack of policy and preparation was so evident, there seemed to be a tactic of shifting the blame from Prime Minister Modi and the central government to the regional governments or state governments.
This is not the fact that mainstream media is shifting the blame from PMO or the Prime Minister's office to the state. That is, media is saying this is the PMO office should do, whether they are doing or not. This is the state government should do. The state government is doing. When there was a failure in that, so media is reporting the failure. So media is never shifting the blame.
When you look at newspapers, I'd say many national newspapers did a fairly decent job of record keeping. But among these newspapers, only very few newspapers really went big with prominent front page headlines or aggressive demands for accountability. One exception to this was the Hindi newspaper Dainik Bhaskar. Their reporting had been fairly bland, for the lack of a better word, in the first wave, but there seemed to have been a clear editorial shift in the second wave. For instance, they were sending reporters to crematoria to count the number of funeral pyres. This was to compare the official numbers that were being put out by governments versus what was actually happening on the ground.
Those images of crematoriums full to capacity and working round the clock didn't just make the front pages of Indian newspapers. They were all over the international news coverage too.
Those days, most of the crematorium was overloaded. And the media has focused on that. But the interpretation which was made by some of the lobbies, that because of the failure of the government infrastructure, the government policies, the government practices, see what is happening? The whole dead body has been burning outside. So what was the alternative? There is no alternative. You cannot create a crematorium overnight.
By the peak of the second wave, in May 2021, the silence from New Delhi had become deafening. Since he came into office in 2014, the Prime Minister, Narendra Modi, has not given any press conferences in which he has taken questions from the media. His one-on-one interviews are rare.
Mera kaam hai 125 crore deshvasiyon ki awaaz banna. और मैं वो ईमानदारी से करने का प्रयास करता हूँ।
However, as the second wave rampaged through the country, with case numbers and death tolls soaring, the Prime Minister finally appeared on television.
मैं उन सभी लोगों को अपनी विनम्र श्रद्धांजलि देता हूँ और उनके परिजनों के प्रति सांत्वना व्यक्त करता हूँ।
Amidst the pandemic panic, not only were people desperately trying to source oxygen and space in hospitals, they were also scrambling for medication. Now, more than ever, medical misinformation was a significant issue. One of the most notable examples involved a man named Baba Ramdev.
Baba Ramdev is essentially a practitioner of yoga who's turned an entrepreneur and a successful entrepreneur at that, and also has realized the power of television. And that has not just multiplied his audience across the country, but also created a connect with his brand and creating Patanjali as an Ayurvedic brand. I think the problem specifically was that Patanjali launched something called Coronil, which was clearly not a cure for COVID-19, but was positioned as a cure for COVID-19. The matter also got a little aggravated because it seemed to have got the blessings of the Ministry of Health. There was a launch ceremony and the Minister of Health was standing right there. But everyone backtracked quite furiously after that because there was a public outcry.
When Baba Ramdev waded further into controversy, calling modern medicine a stupid science, Dr. Harshvardhan Goel, the health minister at the time, the same minister who was present at the launch of the Coronil herbal tablets, had to publicly demand an apology from Ramdev to India's healthcare workers. For the Indian government, COVID was not just a huge public health crisis, it was a public relations crisis as well. This made reporting on failures of governance, or even just calling them out, particularly fraught. Through the pandemic, reporters and outlets had cases filed against them, predominantly in BJP-governed states, for legitimate news reporting. As the second wave was approaching its peak at the end of April 2021, the Indian government ordered Facebook, Instagram and Twitter to take down posts critical of Modi. These included tweets by members of parliament. There was a campaign by the Prime Minister's media team in May 2021 that backfired somewhat. Indians were urged to share positive stories for the Prime Minister to narrate during his monthly radio monologue, Mann Ki Baat, or Inner Thoughts. The online outrage led to the tweet being deleted. In a country with such a vocal media, how was it that through the pandemic, so many news outlets peddled seemingly pointless debates that either distracted, disinformed, or delayed meaningful, impactful discussion? I'm speaking with two senior journalists, R. Jagannathan, editorial director of Swarajya, a magazine and website that says it represents liberal right-of-center discourse in India. We also have Siddharth Vardarajan, founding editor of The Wire, an online publication with a reputation for adversarial and challenging journalism. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us on Context India. My first question is to the both of you. How do you think the Indian media, especially prominent outlets, fared during the pandemic? Mr. Jagannathan, you first.
If you take media as a collective, I would say they did the job well, especially in the first wave, where largely they were trying to give out medical opinion and warning people about what to do, what not to do, that kind of stuff. In the second wave, I think because of the ferocity of the wave, I think everything went for a toss, largely because nobody expected the wave to be so bad. But I think that happened for a short period. There are journalists who are professional and there are amateur and impromptu journalists. But I would say if you take it as a collective, I think it was done a reasonably well job. But there are a lot of people who went bonkers, did a lot of damage. That also is there. But it got quickly corrected.
Mr. Vardarajan, the same question to you.
I think in phase one, it's highly regrettable that a major section of the media played an active role in, shall I say, communalizing the pandemic, trying to paint the spread of coronavirus in the initial phases in religious colors, and also, of course, in the wider ecosystem fueled by right-wing political groups, where there was a very clear and conscious attempt made to present Muslims as the prime carriers of the novel coronavirus. So I think this was highly unfortunate, regrettable, even criminal. And to my mind, this stands out as one of the signal failures of the Indian media in phase one. I think another failure, I would say, is or was the, there was a section that was reporting quite diligently the impact of the unannounced and unplanned government lockdown and the huge hardship this caused on literally millions and millions of workers. And there wasn't enough, sustained coverage of that exodus across all sections of media. There was also an attempt by the section of the media to deflect attention away from the government's very obvious failings in planning for and preparing for the lockdown. And there was a lot of, a lot of dog whistling and blatant targeting of Muslims. And this was also then reflected in a section of the Hindi press. And finally, the use of social media by shall we say, motivated political activists then ensured that this message was carried across the country, so that the toxic messaging was delivered all the way to everybody's smartphone. I think this was the way in which this happened, but the lead was definitely established by a handful of television channels.
Mr. Jagannathan, one review of these channels could be that they did in fact target communities, they did in fact spread misinformation, and they failed to on many occasions fact-check the government's more optimistic claims of how the problem was being handled. How would you rate their performance?
Well, I think the point is everybody was shooting in the dark. So, in fact, if you really want to place irresponsibility, I would blame the foreign media. We certainly underreported deaths in the second wave because it happened too soon and too quickly. But these guys are giving wild numbers like 10 million deaths and 5 million deaths without any basis, just extrapolating from blind numbers. The irresponsibility of the Western media, I would say, takes the cake. Whereas Indian media, since you know that somewhere there is always some amount of bias and misreporting, you tend to discount what you hear. So the damage was more done by the international media, which actually throughout the first wave and the second wave has taken a very negative view, with no concession, no quarter being offered to the fact that the government may have been trying to do it fairly reasonably. When you're talking about communalization. We've been talking about all kinds of things in India which have reversed communalization. We've been talking about the Kumbh all the time as though that was a super spreader. So I think communalization has been happening right through on both sides. It's not a one-sided affair.
Mr. Varatharajan, do you want to respond to that?
Look, the fact is that the communal reporting of the coronavirus in phase one was not the product of popular prejudice or some misgivings among Hindus. These TV channels were getting their cue from the health ministry. So you have the irony of the WHO issuing guidelines saying that in reporting about the pandemic, we should not focus on the religious or other forms of identity of COVID patients. And you had the Union Health Ministry every day in their press conference giving a new percentage for the total number of cases that could be attributed to the Tablighi Jamaat and so on.
Mr. Jagannathan, there were several news publications in India and overseas that ran pictures of the crematoriums that were overflowing. You wrote, and I quote, "Speaking the truth to power does not mean speaking insensitively or showing visuals that can traumatize," end quote. But there were several others who felt that the depth of the problem and the crisis needed strong wording and emotive photographs. Where do you think the media should draw that line?
See, I think if you see cremation is an emotional final farewell to your dear ones. And the Hindu cremation is quite different from the Christian burial. Here you have priests chanting certain things. They connect with your forefathers, right? A lot of people had to give up that because people died of COVID and they couldn't do the last rites. Here you're showing bodies burning there and hundreds of them. And you wanted to show how India was mismanaging it. And you're actually not thinking about the people whose near and dear ones were being burned. Okay. So this is what is wrong about it. The point is the system was overwhelmed. Okay. Hospitals were overwhelmed, oxygen cylinders were in short supply, crematoria were overwhelmed, and that's why many of them had to be cremated in the open. So this was the issue. And instead of saying this is the problem, you sort of showed as though the entire nation is callous. I don't think anybody in the US will show a 9/11 tower coming down every now and then just to traumatize people. But this is what we did. And unfortunately, Indian media did the same thing because most of the photographers are Indian.
I must respectfully disagree with what Jagannathan is saying. I think that it was important for the scale of the tragedy to be conveyed. And I'm saying this as a person who himself had the misfortune of going to a crematorium to conduct the last rites of my father-in-law. And I lost many friends in the pandemic. And I think that I did not find any of the visuals that were carried in the media of, bodies being cremated in a makeshift manner, disrespectful to the dead. Yes, they were deeply embarrassing for the government. And so were visuals and reports of, bodies being disposed of along the Ganges. The government didn't like this. And there was then a concerted campaign to paint this portrayal or depiction of the scale of the tragedy in India as something that is supposedly anti-Indian, anti-Hindu. That's not the case at all. And I think it's highly unfair to call journalists who often put themselves at risk by going out there and covering these scenes of loss, of cremations, to call them vultures. I think that's very, very unfair. The fact is that what you've had is detailed, analysis of death figures by statisticians and others, and nothing is gained by underplaying statistics. And we know that this happened on a systematic basis. So if the government was not so keen to hide or was not so inept in gathering data, you wouldn't have had this mismatch. But there is a mismatch, and I think it's important for the media, whether the media be in India or abroad, to try to put their finger on what the scale of the tragedy might really have been.
Well, I do want to ask the both of you this question as well. India ranks today 142 out of 180 countries in the World Press Freedom Index. As senior journalist yourself, do you see a deterioration in the manner in which government deals with journalists today? Mr. Jagannathan, you first.
No, I don't think so. I think it is the same. No Indian government, anytime since independence, from Nehru down to Modi, not one of them has actually a thick skin. And I think politicians in India have uniformly shown an inability to take criticism, and especially satire and poking fun at them, they are unable to handle it. So this is the kind of politicians we have in India. So it's not unique to this government.
Mr. Varadarajan, do you agree that it's always been this bad?
Things have always been bad, but I think that we have we are currently witnessing a qualitative escalation in official attacks on press freedom. And the reason I say this is because the traditional form in which politicians made their displeasure known was the filing of criminal or civil defamation cases. So when I was editor of the Hindu, Jayalalitha, who was chief minister, filed, I think, two criminal defamation cases against me in response to news stories. Now, newspapers and media platforms are quite used to handling defamation cases because there's been 6 decades of the use of defamation as a tool of harassment. What's been happening in the last 2-3 years is the invoking of criminal charges under Section 153, which is promoting communal hatred, or 505, spreading rumors with a view to triggering an insurrection against the government. You have these charges being leveled against reporters, against editors, against media platforms for news stories. This represents a new and dangerous turn. And I should say that our colleagues in Jammu and Kashmir are particularly badly targeted because you have several reporters against whom FIRs were filed under the anti-terror law for news reports. And journalists are regularly summoned to the police station to render account for stories that they have done which are critical of the state. So yes, there is an added problem which goes beyond the traditional prickliness of politicians that we've seen over the past 6 decades.
Right. My last question to the two of you is this. Media watchdogs and rights organizations call the Indian media increasingly polarized and partisan. Post-pandemic, massive elections coming up. How can the Indian media better fulfill its very important democratic role now going forward? Mr. Jagannathan?
I think viewers and readers get the media they deserve. And the polarization is not unique to India. If you see the US, there you see a similar polarization. The right is not willing to listen to the left. Left is not willing to the a rogue technology giant can deplatform a president. So there are no paragons of press freedom there. Let me tell you that. If you want the truth, you must look at two publications which probably disagree with one another and read both of them on the same issue. Then you will come closer to the truth.
Mr. Varadarajan?
I think the media is polarized and there's very little that anybody can do about it. But I think what the least that we should demand of each other, I think, is that we stand strongly by the right to press freedom in this country. And wherever this right is attacked, no matter who the target is, no matter who's doing the targeting, I think journalists and media platforms have a responsibility and a duty to speak up. There's too much of selectivity. If a government goes after the journalist that we don't like, then we prefer to keep quiet. I think this is wrong. And I just wish that the media as a whole would set aside their own, different perspectives and say, look, we need to safeguard media freedom, because if that goes, then we have nothing left to protect us.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for speaking with us here on Context India. And finally, on this show, we want to share our space with Indian voices outside of government, academics, and mainstream media. There are a multitude of artists in India who've been creating work through the pandemic. We wanted to feature some of the varied languages they work in and the perspectives they bring. This week, we're closing with an excerpt of a song in Bengali titled Amina Tumi, which translates to Me or You. Songwriter Amartya Ray wrote, performed and filmed this all during the first lockdown in India in 2020. I hope you enjoy the music. Thank you for watching Context India here on Al Jazeera English. রোজ দুপুরের খবর খেয়ে মাথা ধরে যায়, বেঁচে থাকার গান আজ ঘরেই গেও ভাই,
ঝুট ঝামেলার জীবন আমার আওয়াজ ফেরত চাই, সময় যখন সবার হাতে সময়ের দাম না। চার দেওয়ালের দেশে সাপ লুডো রাজনীতি, ফেরারি মন বলে হায়।